Welcome to the Department of Justice Agency in Focus, sponsored by Leidos.
The Justice Department, as the federal government's principal law enforcement agency, is also a major grant-making agency. Many of the grant-making dollars go to tribal government to help them improve their own law enforcement. Tom Temin here. For an overview of this work, I spoke with Matt Dummermuth, Principal Deputy Assistant Attorney General in the Office of Justice Programs.
This past year, fiscal year 18, we've had unprecedented levels of funding, actually. So we awarded 225 grants, totaling more than $113 million to 125 separate tribes under our Coordinated Tribal Assistance Solicitation, or CTAS. And that covered everything from community policing to tribal justice systems, juvenile justice programs for tribal youth, infrastructure, victim services, domestic violence, and similar crimes. So a broad range for those. And in addition, we have $133 million set aside in addition to that $113 specifically to expand tribal victim service programs. And so well over $200 million last year, which is pretty unprecedented.
It sounds like, judging from the types of programs you describe, juvenile programs and domestic violence programs, it's the money isn't simply for hardware like weapons and vehicles.
That is certainly part of it. They can use it for that. But the beauty of the way we do solicitations now through CTAS is that the tribes come to us with what their most important needs are. In each of these, there are now 10 purpose areas, and then we can judge them against the statutory restrictions and our own restrictions on use of those funds and try to really get them what they need to address their most pressing crime needs and justice needs.
And how competitive are these grants, or does pretty much everyone who applies get what they hope for?
Not all the grants flow through CTAS, so some the tribes have to compete with state and local law enforcement or other nonprofits. But the ones that are in CTAS are generally, it's just tribes, we're picking the best projects from amongst the tribes. It depends on each year who is applying for what money and how much money is available. But on the tribal set-aside for victim services, it's really not competitive because the amount of money was so substantial. It's more a question, are they the tribes, do they have programs that fit that's providing money to victim services? They have adequate financial monitoring in place and things like that. And so those, technically they're competitive, but there's enough money set aside for that that they're not, at least this past year.
And give us a sense of the range of tribal governments. I mean, some of the tribes are large with thousands of people. Some are tiny villages.
Yeah, any federally recognized tribe is eligible for the CTAS solicitations. And they do range from the largest tribes out there to pretty small tribes. So any size, they're generally eligible.
And if a tribe is large, or if it's near a statistically large metropolitan area, can that tribe avail itself of the nearby government law enforcement, or are they all pretty much self-sufficient?
Each tribe is very different typically. So a lot of times they're working in close coordination with federal and state law enforcement. And sometimes they have, some tribes have 8 officers, some have hundreds of officers. And so it's really depending on their own circumstances and the levels of cooperation with state and federal nearby resources.
And what's the process by which your office, the Office of Justice Programs, figures out who gets the money, and how do you evaluate the different applications?
Yep. Well, we're really excited about the CTAS process. In all these 10 specific grant program areas, the tribe only has to submit one application. So they give a general description of their tribe and the needs of the tribe, and then that one solicitation, we can look at it for all 10 areas and across not just the Office of Justice Programs, but at the COPS office and the Office on violence against women. And so we're all using that same application. It's very streamlined. They have one budget worksheet to fill out, designed to be very simplified for the tribes and also for the Department of Justice's grant program offices to, you know, really avoid duplication and work together for us to coordinate how we make our selections. So it seems to be working pretty well.
We're speaking with Matt Dummermuth. He's Principal Deputy Assistant Attorney General for the Office of Justice Programs. And maybe let's expand a little bit about to some of the other programs under OJP.
We cover a very wide range of programs, almost $6 billion in grants were handed out last year to state and local law enforcement, to tribes, to nonprofits, covering everything from violent crime reduction programs to opioid abuse programs, to child exploitation, missing children, sexual assault kit initiatives to reduce the backlog, just you name it. We're in juvenile justice. We're historic levels of victim services money, just under $4 billion were issued last year. So there's never been more money in the victim services field for state and local victim service providers from the federal government as last year. So we're really active in a lot of areas.
What are the types of products and services that come under victims' compensation programs?
Well, crime victims are eligible to receive certain compensation to cover kind of their immediate needs, housing, and a variety of things. And then there's lots of services on top of that compensation that they're, whether it's counseling, mental health, shelters, you name it, there's a lot of different aspects to helping them recover. Also to remain safe while they're, and the crime is being investigated and prosecuted. So it really covers the full spectrum from, there's also helping them navigate the criminal justice system as they, testify, in sentencing hearings or participate in the criminal justice process.
And how much does the services available to a given victim vary according to jurisdiction? That is to say, is it the same in California as it might be in Idaho?
Well, a large portion, the vast majority of our funding is sent out to the states by formula grant. So each of them should have access to sufficient resources to help the victims in their jurisdiction. And then we have other discretionary programs we fund to fill gaps or to hit priority needs. And then we also have special funds even when there's a large, like the Las Vegas shooting. We recently issued money to both California and Nevada to supplement their own victim services programs because so much was used to handle those large-scale events with a lot of victims.
And in general, is the demand for funding from the federal government at state and local jurisdictions in law enforcement, is it on the rise?
I haven't looked at historically how much demand there is. I think there's never been more victim services money in the field. By the same extent, we're also, we've never done as good a job in trying to help victims respond to the crimes against them and recover from that. So I think we're also doing more. So in terms of state and local law enforcement, I think those demands, they're pretty steady. There's been recent upsurges in violent crime, 2015, 2016, so they've been busy trying to respond to that, and certainly our funding is helping to do that in cooperation with the federal government. So I think the demand is often there as long as there's crime, and so we're doing the best we can to fit the funding we have to the needs in the field.
And what's the mechanism for determining the funding levels requested each year? I mean, you have to work with Congress on the specific amount, but with different statistics coming out each year from the FBI, say, on violent crime and different types of crime across the country. Does those trends, as reported by the FBI, do those affect the levels of funding that OJP gets?
Well, ultimately, it's up to Congress what how much they fund and what programs. But we're always listening to our partners in the field, state, local law enforcement, victim service organizations, the tribes. So we have a lot of ongoing discussions, whether, for particular grants, we're always talking to them as we manage the grants. We're talking to stakeholders all of the time. We're also talking to our federal partners in law enforcement and the U.S. Attorney's offices. And so it's just a constant dialogue every year, and it's ongoing. And so we're looking at the statistics, what we're hearing from the field, and what Congress is hearing from their constituents. And so, yeah, it's just an ongoing process.
Because Homeland Security also has law enforcement grant programs. Every time you see one of those armored command vehicles or something, that looks like a DHS grant, because you see every jurisdiction have them. How do you coordinate with DHS, or do you, to make sure that multiple grants for redundant purposes aren't going to a single law enforcement agency just because they know the money's available?
Well, we typically, in our own grant programs, we ask them about other funding sources they have from the federal government. So that's one way we can try to check that. But generally speaking, they are separate programs in Homeland Security and Department of Justice. At times, we do coordinate when there's a common problem to see if we can resolve it or help assist in resolving that crime issue together. You know, sometimes the grant programs can work. They can enhance each other's, you know, programs if we kind of focus on the same problem.
But there's no database or something to show that if, you know, the XYZ county and XYZ state is applying to get two vehicles and at two different agencies so that they can get four, even though they really only need two. Is there a way of preventing that kind of thing?
I think if they only need two, that would come up through our grants application process and our financial monitoring, the budgets they submit. But if they actually needed four, they might be able to get two from there and two from us. I think there are good systems in place to catch that.
Matt Dummermuth is Principal Deputy Assistant Attorney General for the Office of Justice Programs. More of the interview right after this short break. I'm Tom Temin.
At Leidos, we have supported the U.S. Department of Justice for more than 40 years with unwavering commitment. The department takes on the toughest public safety and law enforcement challenges, and they don't take risks when it comes to technology and legal expertise. From enterprise IT modernization and litigation support to strategic communications and cybersecurity, Justice counts on Leidos to deliver innovative solutions. Learn more about our shared mission at Leidos.com/DOJ.
It may have a nondescript title, but the Justice Department's Office of Justice Programs operates an array of programs to help cities and states with everything from opioid addiction to the wellness of law enforcement officers. Here's Matt Dummermuth, Principal Deputy Assistant Attorney General for the Office of Justice Programs.
The Bureau of Justice Assistance is our primary grants component or office to state and local and tribal law enforcement. So we're working on many different initiatives to support law enforcement. And I think there are certainly our violent crime reduction initiatives is a major part of that. Our opioid epidemic related programming is a big part of that. And also our officer safety and wellness. We're doing a lot to try to not only enhance officer safety, whether it's through equipment or programs, but also the wellness of the officers who are serving the public. They face a lot of trauma in their jobs, a lot of stress. So we have a number of programs to help them manage that, and to look for warning indicators and then get them the help they need. And actually that same type of trauma that law enforcement faces, we're seeing it on the victim services side as well. And so we're trying to incorporate programs that help people who have to deal regularly with crime victims. It's essentially secondary trauma that they face from hearing their stories and helping them through it. And so both on the officer side and the victim services side, we have a number of wellness programs that we're trying to basically help try to keep those officers healthy in their jobs.
Along with that, the National Institute of Justice. That's a great sounding name, but I'm not sure many people precisely know what it does.
Right. It's the primary research component within the Department of Justice. So they're doing everything from helping to implement the First Step Act, which was recently passed by Congress, to figure out how to best do recidivism programs and prepare people coming out of prison to be back in the community and hopefully not to commit future crimes. They test, for example, bulletproof vests to sign off on those that meet federal standards before we fund them or help fund them. They're doing a lot of DNA-related forensic evidence programs to help our investigators and prosecutors come up with high-quality evidence that they use in prosecutions. And so they're really doing a broad range of research to help, you know, practically in the field. They also evaluate programs to try to figure out which programs that we fund actually work and which ones maybe don't work as well so we can prioritize resources. So a lot's going on in each component, but certainly in NIJ as well.
And at NIJ, is a lot of the research done by staff? For example, if you're testing bulletproof vests, do you have the capability in-house of setting them up, shooting bullets at them to see what happens, or do you contract that out?
It's a mix of both in-house things that we can do and then things that we contract to other experts. And some grants that we fund the best research projects that come to us. So it's a real mix of all three.
And especially in those areas of the psychological side of either officer wellness or victims of crime, it seems like that's something that would be almost done at the university level or the academic level might be the best resource for that. True?
Yeah, we're looking at all different ways of coming up with solutions. So yeah, certainly we use academic research institutions for much of that.
Matt Dummermuth is Principal Deputy Assistant Attorney General for the Office of Justice Programs. We'll bring you more of the interview after this short break. I'm Tom Temin.
At Leidos, we have supported the U.S. Department of Justice for more than 40 years with unwavering commitment. The department takes on the toughest public safety and law enforcement challenges, and they don't take risks when it comes to technology and legal expertise. From enterprise IT modernization and litigation support to strategic communications and cybersecurity, Justice counts on Leidos to deliver innovative solutions. Learn more about our shared mission at leidos.com/DOJ.
Welcome back to our final segment of an interview with Matt Dummermuth, Principal Deputy Assistant Attorney General for the Office of Justice Programs. The other one I wanted to ask you about, what are the trends you're seeing and what happens in the grants programs there, is the Office of Sex Offender Sentencing, Monitoring, Apprehending, Registering, and Tracking, or the SMART Office.
Yes, we are busy trying to get more states to implement the Sex Offender National Registry Act. It's called SORNA, and so we're there's approximately 18 states that are in full compliance with that, and that sets out basically a national system through each state's sex offender registry so that we can really track everybody who's supposed to be registered and when they change residences, change jobs, so that parents and other people in the community know where those registered sex offenders live and work. And so we're busy trying to, many states are close to substantial compliance, but they're not quite there. And so we're regularly monitoring each state, whether they fall out of compliance sometimes, or whether they come into compliance. And then we give them technical assistance. We're working with them to help them get into compliance. Another big program they're working on, going back to the tribal issue we started, is called the Tribal Access Program. And so it gives individual tribes the ability to have access to the National Crime Information Systems. So in the past, a lot of times, they didn't have a mechanism to get their own tribal protection orders in a domestic violence case, for example, or to register their own sex offenders through their state systems. And so this is a way to give them direct access to the National Sex Offender Registry and also other federal criminal databases. So we install basically It's a computer that gives, you know, it's got special information privacy protections and things, but it gives them a terminal basically to do this in their own tribe, and it's really working great. We have 50 tribes already part of the program, and we're hoping to bring that up to more than 70 by the end of the year. It's helped us, you know, two examples. It helped solve a kidnapping case, captured the suspect and recovered the vulnerable victim in a tribal case. And then another one, we prevented a domestic violence offender from purchasing a firearm because of this TAP project that the tribe had. So we're really excited about that.
And the final area is the Office of Juvenile Justice and Delinquency Prevention. Juvenile delinquency is as old as mankind, I guess you might say. And I was wondering what the immigration question, what the effect of that might be on juvenile justice and delinquency prevention.
Well, certainly the primary intersection with kind of the immigration question and juvenile justice is the issue of gangs, because a lot of gangs seek to recruit vulnerable youth. And so if there are youth who are parents brought them in here illegally, they're a special target, I think, of gangs. And so we have certain programs to try to make sure that those kids are not recruited, and to help law enforcement try to prevent a lot of that through programming and tools we give them. Another, I guess, slightly different intersection, there's a lot of child exploitation through the internet going on. We're seeing more and more of that coming from overseas. And so it's harder for law enforcement to stop a lot of that. And so we have to come up with better solutions to investigate that with our international partners, I think. And we're already doing a lot for working with Homeland Security and the FBI. The department's working with them to do more traveler cases where people leave the country to engage in illegal acts with kids. We're doing, I think, a lot more in prosecuting those types of crimes. But the child pornography piece of that, which is really sexual abuse pictures of kids, well, there's a lot of that being done overseas because it's harder for law enforcement to catch. So we're working as a department to try to solve some of those emerging issues.
All right. And finally, you've had a lot of jobs in the Justice Department throughout a pretty long career there. Give us the short form.
I don't know if I can do it in a short way, but my previous to leading OJP, I served as U.S. Attorney in the Northern District of Iowa. And prior to that, I served in another U.S. Attorney's office as a Special Assistant U.S. Attorney, and worked on human trafficking and other issues in the Civil Rights Division. And so it's a really neat opportunity here at Office of Justice Programs to use all that prior experience and to really try to support what the rest of the department is doing through our funding sources, our research, our statistical collections, and building cooperation with state and local, both law enforcement and victim service organizations.
That's Matt Dummermuth, Principal Deputy Assistant Attorney General for the Office of Justice Programs. To listen to this program again, log on to federalnewsnetwork.com and click on Insights. I'm Tom Temin.
Thank you for listening to Department of Justice Agency in Focus, sponsored by Leidos on Federal News Radio, part of the Federal News Network.